بالبيت على المسمى قال كلهم نور واحد. Actually they were all same night.
Yes.
And look, when some of the actions of Ahl al-Bayt actually is symbol there are some of the actions are lessons for us to be taken.
Yes.
So it means that the Prophet, the leader of the Islamic Ummah, when he is in need of okay. a moral session or moral trainer,
yes.
So we as a follower of this Prophet, we definitely okay. Are in need of a trainer too.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to you, brother.
Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Ayman Rizvi, it was very kind of you. Nice elaboration on some of the main features of human beings as tackled by the leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. And thank you much, dear listeners. This is Real Points. I'm Atan, the host of this program. For more information, visit our website at parstudio.com/Ian Call of Islam page, also a YouTube page and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. May Allah bless you all. Do not forget us in your du'as. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you to doubt you would be the worst to stay deep inside? I know amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong, a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Around the World with Reporters.
Palestinian groups in the Gaza Strip hailed the Hezbollah's move to fire a parade of rockets toward the Israeli regime in response to Thursday Israeli air raids on South Lebanon. Palestinians welcomed the move, describing it as a strong message to Israel.
The Lebanese rockets foiled Israeli plans and projects aimed at separating the resistance in the region. It proved that the resistance won't remain silent in the face of the Israeli crimes. The Lebanese response is a message that Israel cannot impose its policies in the region, and the resistance will keep defending its rights.
The Israeli military said its Iron Dome system intercepted 10 of 19 rockets on Friday, with 6 falling in open areas in a third day of tension across the borders. There have been no reports of casualties or serious damage. Palestinian groups expressed their support to all forms of resistance against Israel and announced their readiness to stand with the resistance movement in Lebanon in defending their rights.
We hail the response of the resistance in Lebanon against Israeli airstrikes. This Lebanese move emphasizes the importance of the resistance in defending its rights and foiling the Israeli policies. The Israeli regime is also still practicing all forms of violence against the Islamic and Arab nations, and the resistance is the only way to put an end to these crimes.
The resistance said it won't allow the Israeli regime to impose new policies in the region and that Israel won't go unpunished for its crimes.
We really welcome the Lebanese move to respond to the Israeli airstrikes in South Lebanon and fire rockets at the occupied territories. We stress that we are all united in resistance to liberating Palestine and getting the Israeli occupation away from the region. We are supporting our brothers in Lebanon, and we are all ready to defend any Israeli aggression against Lebanon.
Palestinian factions here welcome the Lebanese response against the Israeli attacks, stressing on fully supporting the resistance in Lebanon against the Israeli aggression with all means. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it has fired dozens of rockets near positions of Israeli occupation forces in the Shabah farms. Hezbollah added that the latest round of rocket fire came in response to the Israeli air raids that hit South Lebanon on Thursday. In an interview with a local agency, Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed that the resistance is much more capable than it was in 2006, yet downplayed the possibility of an all-out war.
In this phase, the resistance is in an extremely high state of readiness, and it cannot even be compared to the level of capability and alertness which was present in 2006, whether in the arms, preciseness, military planning, training, preparation, and capabilities. And Israel knows this, so if they launch a foolish aggression under any pretext, Hezbollah will be ready.
An Israeli military spokesman stressed that Israel does not wish to escalate to a full war, but is prepared for it. Experts believe Israel was trying to move escalation towards the inside of Lebanon, but the resistance took things back to square one.
The Israelis have been trying for a while to change the rules of engagement with Lebanon, but Hezbollah's resistance has proven today that the Israelis cannot change the status quo as long as there is a resistance which is ready to face the Israeli aggressions. This was not only retaliation to the latest round of Israeli shelling, it was also a warning and a response to all the violations committed by the Israelis, whether in the air, land, or sea.
Lebanese President Michel Aoun and Lebanese caretaker Prime Minister Hassan Diab urged the United Nations interim forces in Lebanon to put pressure on Israel to stop its aggressions against Lebanon's sovereignty. Several statements from Palestinian resistance groups were issued in support of Hezbollah's retaliation, which many see as stressing the full legitimacy of resistance groups to face occupation forces. With no civilian areas targeted from both sides, the status quo seems to have remained unchanged. It's the first time the Israelis launched such an attack against Lebanon since the 2006 war, but it's also the first time since then that the Lebanese resistance retaliates with multiple rockets against an Israeli military occupation post. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Following a recent call by the Afghan president on the entire nation to establish a united national front against the Taliban, residents of many cities, including Kabul, have welcomed the call by different moves, not just taking to the streets to chant supportive slogans and joining local armed fronts across the country.
Rural people of Afghanistan widely welcome President Ghani's call for the establishment of a national front against the Taliban. We saw how rural people in Herat and other cities put their unity on show by chanting slogans in support of Afghan military forces. This shows that it is a real national uprising.
The entire nation knows that the Taliban have ruined the infrastructures. They are just after war and violence. So I strongly support Afghan national security and defense forces to stand against Taliban.
Afghan military forces say they are committed to strongly pound terrorists all over Afghanistan, mainly in southern Helmand province, thanks to strong support they are receiving from locals.
Our report suggests that the shadow governor of Taliban for Helmand province and a number of top military commanders plus hundreds of them have so far been killed in attacks conducted by our forces. We will strongly pound anyone who stands against the nation, against the republic and the constitution. The Taliban must realize that we are committed to defend our land.
Referring to the recent war crimes committed by Taliban, locals here say, unlike the beliefs of U.S. Special Representative for Afghan Reconciliation Zalmay Khalilzad, who had said that Taliban has changed, the recent advances of Taliban proved that they are still following a dogmatic ideology. Some of the displaced Afghans accused Taliban militants of committing war crimes during their assaults on districts and provincial capitals over the recent month. They say the Taliban have killed civilians, used them as human shields, and destroyed their houses. The only way against the militants' violence, they say, is to resist. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Britain is known to be the hub of terrorist and corrupt fugitive political leaders fled from Pakistan. This is London residence of Altaf Hussain, a leader of Karachi-based ethnic political party. Back home, Hussain was convicted on terrorism and murder charges. Nonetheless, UK never handed him back to Pakistan of being what many believe an intelligence asset of British secret services. This is Ishaq Dar, the former finance minister who fled from Pakistan in 2018 to avert prosecution on money laundering charges. And here comes the former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, who has been staying in these luxurious flats, which judges back in Pakistan found were purchased with the looted public money. However, pressure from Islamabad has now compelled Britain to change its long-held pro-fugitive policy after London decided to expel Nawaz Sharif. His request to further stay in the UK was rejected by the Britain. His Pakistani passport is already invalid after Islamabad refused to renew it.
The UK government has been under intense pressure, not only from Pakistan, but various other countries whose fugitive leaders have been living in UK for a long period of time. UK government was under great pressure and under great criticism. And that could be a reason that the UK government basically did not allow Nawaz Sharif to stay on or extend the visa of Nawaz Sharif to stay in UK.
Nawaz Sharif fled Pakistan after plundering public exchequer. He should now come back to Pakistan and must return the money he looted, and after this he can comfortably stay at his home in Pakistan.
Sharif was convicted and sentenced for 10 years on money laundering charges, but was released from jail in November 2019 only for medical treatment for a few weeks. However, since then, he has been residing in London despite repeated court orders to return home to face trial of corruption cases. The former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is fast running out of his legal and political options after Britain decided to expel him. One of the choices, analysts believe, is to seek shelter in an Arab country after exhausting his all legal options to delay his expulsion from the UK. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Pakistan's president, foreign minister and others joined this rally in support of the people of Kashmir. The rallies were held in Pakistan to mark the second anniversary of India's, what Pakistan says, illegal move to revoke the special status of the disputed Kashmir region. India on August 5, 2019, abrogated the Article 370 of the Indian Constitution that granted special status to the Jammu and Kashmir region. Pakistan rejected the move as a violation of the UN Security Council resolutions that seek a referendum to decide the final status of Jammu and Kashmir.
I want to assure my Kashmiri brothers that Pakistan will continue to support the people of Kashmir for their right to self-determination. We will continue to support Kashmiris till they get freedom.
Go India, go back!
Separately, Kashmiri leaders also took to the streets in Islamabad. The All Parties Hurriyat Conference staged a protest not far from the Indian High Commission in Islamabad.
We, the Kashmiris, not only in occupied Kashmir, Azad Kashmir or in Pakistan, but over the world where the Kashmiris are present, they are making this day as a black day. Why we are making this day as a black day? Because against the will and wish of the people of the Kashmir, India has abrogated its articles.
Protesters condemned the Indian policy towards Kashmir and vowed to continue their struggle until Kashmiris get their right to self-determination.
Kashmir is a disputed territory as per the United Nations resolutions. The resolutions have been passed and at the behest of the India. It was India who took the Kashmir dispute to the United Nations. And it is India, it is the then Prime Minister of India, Jawaharlal Nehru, who in his communique to Pakistan said, we do not believe in forced marriages, and Kashmir will be given right to self-determination.
Kashmir remains at the heart of tensions between India and Pakistan. The dispute dates back to the partition of the subcontinent in 1947. Both countries have fought wars over the only Muslim majority state controlled by India.
tensions between India and Pakistan have further deepened since India revoked the special status of Kashmir. Pakistan insists India has to reverse the changes for any talks. India, however, is defending the changes, calling it as its internal matter, and hence the deadlock. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
The brutal battle between Taliban and government forces has intensified recently, with each side struggling to gain more area under their control. Top military officials in southern Helmand province have urged the residents of the city of Lashkargah to evacuate their houses. Reports say Afghan forces are planning to launch a heavy attack on Taliban inside the city of Lashkargah, who use residences of locals as human shields.
We had announced that if a single Talib arrives in Lashkargah city, he will be killed. Even if 1,000 of them arrive, we will kill them all. This fight is not ours. They are takfiris and slaves of Punjabis. They aren't Afghans. Our fight against them is a pure jihad, and we will continue this holy jihad with a strong will.
Taliban has in recent weeks launched more attacks on provincial capitals, mainly in southern and western Afghanistan. This comes as many have believed neither the government nor the Taliban will achieve their goals to take full control of the country via insisting on further war. They say negotiation is the only solution to resolve the conflicts.
Today, the ancient city of Herat is under attack, and the war has reached inside people's houses in Lashkargah of Helmand. Meanwhile, violence is spreading across the northern Taliban city and other areas. We still hope to reach peace through responsible moves by the government and Taliban.
Based on official figures, over 1,000 Taliban militants have lost their lives in a series of attacks carried out by Afghan air and ground forces backed by local armed fronts since last week. Afghan forces increased their attacks on Taliban militants and liberated some of lost areas, including Nijrab and Talaobarfak districts in northern and northeastern Afghanistan. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani recently called on the entire nation to establish a united national resistance front against the Taliban. He argues that since the Taliban have put military victory on the top of its priorities list, the time has come to talk to militants with guns and resistance. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
British Muslim advocacy group CAGE is preparing to go to war with the British government after announcing a legal bid against Education Minister Gavin Williamson over what they call discriminatory guidance to school leaders on Palestine. CAGE say the letter issued by Williamson on May the 28th amounted to a disgraceful censorship of political dissent in schools and discriminated against students by infringing their rights to freedom of expression.
CAGE has seen nearly 50 cases of people, of students, who have been targeted in their schools for speaking openly about Palestine and defending the rights of the Palestinian people to defend themselves against a system of apartheid and oppression and occupation.
The government's crackdown on Palestine solidarity in UK schools occurred during the huge global outrage over Israel's relentless attacks against worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and civilians in Gaza last May. Williamson's letter warned teachers to remain impartial on the conflict, but also warned of concerning rise in anti-Semitic incidents. However, CAGE believe this is censorship cloaked by bogus accusations of anti-Semitism.
It is definitely becoming more the case that speaking on the issue of Palestine, advocating for the rights of the Palestinian people, exposing the crimes of the Israeli apartheid regime, these are becoming increasingly issues which are criminalized, issues which are securitized, dealt with very punitive measures, whether in schools, whether in public spaces, or the debate about it is completely hounded out of the public space, such that these issues are silenced and they are unheard.
CAGE are confident of success, as they believe that the government's position on this topic won't hold water if confronted in the courts. And many people are hoping for success here, as the way things are going now, many critics claim and fear that it could become essentially illegal to support the Palestinian cause publicly in the not-too-distant future unless court battles like this are won now. Robert Carter, London.
Thousands of Lebanese commemorated the first anniversary of the catastrophic explosion which rocked Beirut. Accountability and justice was the main demand of the families of the martyrs.
August 4 should turn into a historic day by holding criminals accountable. The criminals who brought the ammonium nitrate to the port, they killed our children. I lost my only son because of their corruption.
I lost my brother in the blast and lost my mother only 2 months later. She died because of her grief for her son. I want justice for the sake of my brother and my mother. We want justice and we want to see everyone connected with the crime being put on trial.
On August 4th, 2020, a stockpile of ammonium nitrate fertilizer, which was stored without prudence, exploded, becoming one of the largest non-nuclear blasts in modern history, leaving over 200 people killed and thousands injured. The state of mourning for those who fell on the Beirut port explosion is still well alive in the hearts and minds of the Lebanese people, yet justice for the victims still seems out of sight. Yet mourning rallies quickly turned violent after some protesters tried to break into the parliament building. Security forces fired water cannon and tear gas at stone-throwing protesters. Several people were injured. In parallel with the protests, a virtual conference was held in support of Lebanon, where Lebanese President Michel Aoun said the quest for truth and full justice still the main claim of every Lebanese.
I have already committed before the Lebanese to serve justice and hold accountable everyone whose involvement is proven by the investigation. Today, I restate my pledge that no one is above the law, no matter how high they may rank. Let justice go all the way in probe and the trials.
Aoun stressed that the funds given to Lebanon from the International Monetary Fund must be spent in the best way to face the collapse and embark on reforms, one of which is forensic auditing, which he highlighted as very significant. This event comes as Lebanese officials are yet to form a cabinet. Demonstrators' anger is not only at the injustice in the Beirut port case, but at the ineffectiveness of the political class in dealing with the crisis. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Ebrahim Raisi was sworn into office as Iran's new president, with the prospect of change and resolutions to make Iran a better place to live. 115 heads of state and political officials from 73 countries attended the inauguration ceremony held in Iran's parliament on Thursday. With Judiciary Chief Ghulam Hossein Mohseni Eji on his side, Raisi pledged to protect the constitution and to serve the country and the Islamic establishment.
I, as president, swear to God Almighty before the Holy Quran and before the Iranian nation that I will safeguard the country's official religion and the establishment of the Islamic Republic and the country's constitution.
Ebrahim Raisi won the 13th presidential election on June 18th with a landslide, garnering 64% of the votes. His predecessor, Hassan Rouhani, left office with a pile of unresolved political and economic issues on the table, from snowballing inflation rates to the unconcluded nuclear talks with world powers. The 8th Iranian president vowed to fix all those issues, but he said he will not tie the country's economy to the nuclear deal.
Sanctions against the Iranian nation must be lifted. I will support any diplomatic process that would fulfill this goal. Meanwhile, the Islamic Republic of Iran regards its neighboring countries as its kin. So our first and foremost priority will be to upgrade our ties with our neighbors.
As has been the custom for any incoming administration, Raisi was endorsed by Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei on Tuesday. Now, after taking the oath of office, Raisi will have to name his cabinet members, who will then show up here in Majlis for a vote of confidence from lawmakers.
coming from the Persepolis camp, Ebrahim Raisi holds different, if not opposing views, compared to his pro-reformist predecessor, Hassan Rouhani. So something like clinching a deal with the U.S. as the ultimate way out for Iran's ailing economy is not expected to be on top of his agenda. As the new president says, he will find new destinations to fix the economy. Yusuf Jalali from the Iranian parliament in Tehran.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Following the global wave of demonstrations after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis last year, Republican state legislatures mounted a counterattack, introducing a deluge of anti-riot bills designed to make it easier for law enforcement to clamp down on demonstrations perceived as disorderly. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by John Skolnick Ryder. This article is published under the heading, U.S. Police are backing bills that make it easier to crush nonviolent protests. Following the global wave of demonstrations after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis last year, Republican state legislatures mounted a counterattack, introducing a deluge of anti-riot bills designed to make it easier for law enforcement to clamp down on demonstrations perceived as disorderly. According to a Pan America report from late April, Republicans have proposed at least 100 anti-riot bills in 33 states from last June to this March. These measures aim to address protest-related activities by greatly expanding the definition of riot, granting criminal immunity to drivers who hit rioters with their cars, suspending state benefits for those who participate in a riot, and increasing penalties for demonstrators who block traffic. Over the past several months, the bills have sparked progressive pushback over the perception that they grant the police unchecked power to crack down on nonviolent protests and chill free speech rights. Indeed, reports now make clear that police organizations and their allies have played an outsized role in introducing and supporting these measures, often by advocating and lobbying for them behind the scenes. According to new research related, U.S. police officers and law enforcement lobbies have supported one or more anti-riot bills in at least 14 states since last June. Anti-riot bills in 19 states have been sponsored by legislators with backgrounds in law enforcement. Because lobbying records are inconsistent from state to state, these figures may be underestimates. Almost nobody knows right now that police are pushing for these bills. Connor Gibson, an opposition researcher who compiled the data, told reporters in an interview. He added, "People are not surprised that police are lobbying for bills that let police off the hook and push the blame to protesters." But I don't think that should be the measure of why this trend is important. Consider HB 445 in Alabama, which broadens the definition of riot and heightens the legal penalties against protesters who block traffic. The bill, which has been indefinitely postponed, was sponsored by at least 9 state lawmakers who are or were affiliated with various police departments and organizations. The bill's primary sponsor, GOP Representative Alan Treadway, is a retired Birmingham assistant police chief. Two co-sponsors, Representatives Alan Farley and Philip Pites, respectively, served as police chief in Satosma Police Chief and Alabama State Trooper. In North Carolina, a similar bill is being considered that was sponsored by a total of 7 police-affiliated lawmakers. The bill's two primary sponsors, Representatives Charles Miller and Alan McNeil, respectively, served as deputy chief of the Brunswick County Sheriff's Office and chief deputy of Randolph County Sheriff's Office. Police culture is deeply embedded in our state legislatures, Gibson said, observing that many legislators have conflicts of interest when it comes to holding the police accountable. These bills are also heavily influenced by police organizations like Fraternal Order of Police and the Sheriff's Association, whose state chapters have lobbied for several different anti-riot bills throughout the U.S. since June. Consider Florida's HB1, which became law in April. The comprehensive measure, which makes aggravated rioting a felony, denies bail to those charged of a misdemeanor during a protest and grants civil legal immunity to motorists who drive through demonstrators blocking a road. Was supported by the Florida Sheriff's Association, the Florida Police Chiefs Association, and Florida Smart Justice Alliance, a broad coalition of organizations focused on the state's criminal justice and correction system. Barney T. Bishop III, the CEO of Florida Smart Justice Alliance, explained his organization's stance in an interview with reporters, disputing the notion the HB1 would embolden those on the far right to retaliate against social justice protesters. "It's not about emboldening anybody," he said. "Florida is as opposed to the Proud Boys and the far right groups as we are to the far right groups," unquote. His explanation of the bill's aims, however, suggests otherwise. Protesters today feel that they can go anywhere they want, do anything they want, beat some cars, cuss and try to incite violence from police by screaming in their face, Bishop added. "There are people that will incite violence. Most of the time, it will be the people in the protest themselves or the people behind the protest, like George Soros and Antifa and BLM. There is little evidence that last year's wave of social justice demonstrations after the Floyd murder was plagued by violence, according to a report last September by the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, ACLED. About 95% of all demonstrations from last May to last August were peaceful. By comparison, the report notes that authorities have used force. such as firing less lethal weapons like tear gas, rubber bullets, and pepper spray, or beating demonstrators with batons. In over 54% of the demonstrations in which they have engaged. Nora Benavides, director of PEN America's U.S. Free Expression Programs, affirmed ACLED's findings, telling reporters that the Republican-backed anti-riot bills are trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. Legislators are predicting their bills on a circumstance that characterizes protests as somehow inherently criminal. As in the Florida case, a newly enacted anti-riot bill in Iowa, SF-342, was backed by various police-affiliated organizations, including the Iowa Peace Officers Association, the Iowa State Police Association, the Iowa Fraternal Order of Police, the Iowa State Patrol Supervisors Association, and the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association, according to state lobbying records. Interestingly, the Iowa Peace Officers Association and the Iowa State Sheriff and Deputy Association were initially undecided on the bill after it was introduced in February. At the time, the bill simply sought to prevent police officers from being discharged, disciplined, or threatened with discharge if their names appeared on the Brady list, which tracks officers who might lack credibility in certain legal cases involving the police. Since then, the bill has morphed into full-fledged anti-riot legislation, which won the support of the two law enforcement associations. Adam Mason, State Policy Organizing Director for the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement Action Fund, told reporters that the Iowa bill reflects the overrepresentation of police interest in the state legislature. "We absolutely believe in having a citizen legislature," Mason said, "but that also means we need to have a diversity of opinions. That would mean having legislators from all walks of life. It seems these legislators feel like they don't have to listen to community members because they are coming from concerted backgrounds in law enforcement." Bishop disagreed. "There is no more conflict of interest than a doctor selected to the legislature proposing medical legislation," he told reporters. A major reason why anti-riot bills are controversial are their provisions, which specifically grant civil and criminal immunity to drivers attempting to flee riots, especially given the violent counterattacks social justice protesters have seen in recent years. In 2017, during the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, an alleged white supremacist rammed his car into a throng of counter-protesters, killing a woman named Heather Heyer and injuring 19 others. The driver was later convicted of first-degree murder. More recently, in February of this year, an admitted Klansman drove his truck into a group of peaceful protesters near Richmond, Virginia, though nobody was seriously injured. Last year, NPR reported that there had been at least 50 vehicle ramming incidents since protests against police violence erupted nationwide in late May, a marked increase from prior years. Gibson told reporters that the uptick in vehicle-related violence against protesters is precisely what makes the recent surge in anti-riot bills so concerning. "You can't be a politician and not be aware that there is an undercurrent of informal vigilant justice," he explained. Verde police are emboldening white supremacists to take things into their own hands. Most of the driver immunity provisions are predicted on two conditions: that the driver was fleeing a riot in order to protect themselves, and that they exercise due care in the course of colliding with demonstrators. But the reality in court might not be so straightforward. Sergeant Fred Lepley, senior director of the Iowa State Police Association, which supported SF 342, told reporters that incidents in which protesters threaten drivers are often difficult to comprehend without proper context. Lepley said that provisions are designed to assist citizens that are attempting to remove themselves from a dangerous situation but find that protesters are purposely forcing their hand by standing in front of the vehicle, refusing to let them leave, and possibly attempting to get at the driver to do harm. In many of these cases, the driver is driving very slow, and the protesters intentionally get in front of the vehicle, placing themselves in harm's way. Oklahoma Representative Justin Humphrey, a Republican who sponsored HB 1674, which also contains a driver immunity provision, echoed Lepley, saying by email that this bill is about protecting the public and that it enables a person to protect their family and themselves from criminal who demonstrate intent to commit harm, unquote. Reporters could not find evidence that recent demonstrators have deliberately impeded traffic in an effort to provoke or harm drivers. Other U.S. states where police organizations have actively supported anti-riot bills include Tennessee, Texas, Washington, Ohio, Missouri, Kentucky, Indiana, Idaho, Connecticut, Arkansas, and Arizona. Though most of these bills have surfaced within the last couple of years, Gibson told reporters that the Republican sense of urgency for their implementation has no logical or historical basis. Rioting was already a dangerous illegal type of behavior, he said, but people still did it. These politicians are deluging themselves if they think that making rioting extra illegal is going to change anything. They are trying to throw peaceful protesters in jail because that is more of a thorn in their side than the riots are.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's new episode of The Lantern here on IRIB English Radio. I personally am so very much for animal cruelty-free products and procedures. I know that scientists sometimes have reason to justify their experiments on animals for the greater good, for the sake of humanity, and stuff like that, but there always should be a line, right? And Islamically speaking, I'm not sure whether that is the objective behind the creation of animals. I'm no scholar. The reason I wanted to open up with that line is because That is, in a way, related to the short story we're going to hear on today's episode. And let's hear it, our short, interesting little anecdote, and we're going to be right back. In the name of Allah, Salaamu Alaikum, dear friend. Welcome to this episode of Lantern. As you know, we have an interesting story at the beginning of each episode. The title of today's story is Keep Swimming. During a brutal study at Harvard in the 1950s, Dr. Kurt Richter placed rats in a pool of water to test how long they could tread water. On average, they'd give up and sink after 15 minutes. But right before they gave up due to exhaustion, the researchers would pluck them out, dry them off, let them rest for a few minutes, and put them back in for a second round. In this second try, how long do you think they lasted? Remember, they had just swam until failure only a few short minutes ago. How long do you think? Another 15 minutes? 10 minutes? 5 minutes? No, 60 hours. That's not an error. That's right, 60 hours of swimming. The conclusion drawn was that since the rats believed that they would eventually be rescued, they would push their bodies way past what they previously thought impossible. I will leave you with this thought. If hope can cause exhausted rats to swim for that long, what could a belief in yourself and your abilities do for you? Remember what you're capable of. Remember why you're here. Keep swimming.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Looking at this experiment, a whole flood of verses came to my mind, but and a hadith as well. But one of the things that really, you know, made me connect the dots in a way in my head is, I guess this is why the idea of awaiting relief in Tadar al-Faraj is so emphasized and so important in our religion. Believing in the idea of Faraj, of that relief, is to know everything is going to be okay. Even if that Faraj, that relief, that reappearance doesn't happen in my lifetime, the fact that I know one day it's going to happen. Because my problems, not to sound so harsh, but my problems are not special. I'm not special in that sense. Everyone is going through problems since the beginning of time. But at the end of the day, everyone is going through a struggle, a battle in their lives. And everyone needs for things to turn for the better. And if we have that open-minded, collective, love for all, compassion for all mindset, and understand that if one day only my problems are resolved, yet everyone else is going through suffering, it's not going to mean anything. So the proper form of relief and relief from problems is for everyone to live happily, peacefully, with justice, with equity and equality, right? And that day will come. And if I really believe in it, the problems I have today, the problems I had yesterday, the problems I have tomorrow, all of those worries, all of those concerns, all that anxiety and distress and hopelessness I could have regarding my own situation will be easier to bear. I'm not saying it's going to go away. The rats, lab rats were still in that water. But enduring that water, surviving that water, was easier for them. It was easier for them to power through it because they knew at the end, it's going to be okay. They're going to be saved. And I guess that's the power of hope. A lot of our verses, a lot of the verses of the Holy Quran, a lot of our narrations tell us about the importance of hope, because once you lose hope, or even once you lose curiosity for what lies beyond that bend, once you're no longer interested to know what tomorrow holds, you're going to sink. You're going to fall. You're going to drown. And that's not what Allah wants for you. He wants you to have the strength to carry on. And sometimes, sure, strength is something that Allah gives us, right? But a lot of times, first, He looks for ourselves to develop that mentality, that capacity within ourselves, within our souls, within our nafs, within our spirit, so that He can complement it with His divine grace, with God-given strength to help us make it through. So it's really important, first and foremost, like Allah says in the Quran, He does not change a people unless they change what is within themselves. We can pray for that. We can pray that, oh Allah, give me the proper mindset. Give me the ability to believe in the fact that tomorrow is a new day and something good will happen and things will change for the better. For me as an individual and for all of humanity as a big family. I was going to say big happy family, but sometimes most of us aren't happy. But inshallah ta'ala, when the verse in the Quran says that la taqnatu min rahmatillah, don't lose hope in Allah's mercy, because that's what disbelievers do. Looking forward to tomorrow and resting assured, being sure, being certain that tomorrow will bring new things. Things will change. I will not stay in these circumstances forever. Having that positive mindset is the attribute of a believer. Because at the end of the day, we're all going to die, right? I'm either going to die in the path of Allah, or I'm going to die trying getting there. I hope this could just act as a food for thought, right? I hope that it could just act as a small speck of light or hope in the heart of anyone who needed to hear it today. That أفضل العبادة انتظار الفرج, the best form of worship is awaiting relief. The best thing you can do for yourself today and for your Lord is to know everything is going to be okay. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillah tatma'innul qulub.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en, And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.